There are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Amen. So we come now to the last verse of the Gospel of John. It's interesting how he puts it. It's interesting. If you go down to the book of Acts, the first verse, when Luke writes here, he says, "The former treatise have I made, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began, both to do and to teach." The Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, written by the same writer, he said, the book of Luke is just a record of what he began to do. And what he means to say is, the book of Acts carries it on. What Jesus began to do, this recording of the Gospels, goes on in the book of Acts as the church is established and the work of God goes worldwide. Now, as you look at verse 25, it's obviously a case of what we call hyperbole. And what that means is simply this. It's where you exaggerate something for the sake of emphasis. You see it there. He says, notice how he says it. And he's talking about the 33 years in which Jesus lived. 33 years and a half he lived. And he says this about it. "There are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written every one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written." The statement is not meant to be taken literally. It's meant to be an exaggeration for the sake of emphasis. We talk like this all the time. We'll say something like, "He eats like a horse." That's an exaggeration. Nobody eats like a horse, believe you me. We talk about a river of tears. He prayed a river of tears. Well, in the New Testament, you'll find this statement oftentimes. The whole city came out to hear Jesus. It isn't meant to mean that every individual, baby, an old person, sick person, healthy person, came out. It's just saying, like we do, everybody was there. But we use language that way, and that's what this is. And one of the things this tells you is that when you study the Bible, you need to apply the normal use of language to the Bible as you interpret the Bible. For instance, the book of Psalms is poetry. And you'll read in there something about God having wings. And you start picturing God with wings. Well, that's poetry. That's the language of poetry. And it doesn't mean to be taken literally that God has wings. And I'm not taking from the Bible when I say that. The Bible uses language like we do. The Bible talks about the four corners of the earth, and somebody says, "Well, it means the earth is flat." It doesn't mean that. It's just how we use language. We talk that way. Obviously, you look at the Bible, you're going to find the Bible is right in line with what we now know about the earth. The Bible uses language that way. It's one of the problems we have in the book of Revelation. When people read the book of Revelation, they try to read it like the book of Romans. The book of Revelation cannot be read like the book of Romans. It's a different type of literature. It's apocalyptic. It's literature in pictures. And very odd, if you take that book of Revelation literally, when Jesus comes, you're going to have a sword going out of his mouth. I don't know of anybody that really takes that like that. If you do, that's fine. I don't mean to hurt you. You see, he's coming riding on a white horse. And you say, "Well, I know that's got to be literal." Well, okay. And someone said, "Are the four horses in Revelation 6, could they run in the Kentucky Derby?" And that's a good question. It's not meant to be looked at like that. It's literature in pictures. Where Romans is basically setting out proposition after proposition and deduction and language. You study the words and their connections and all of that. So we study the Bible that way. We have poetic literature. We have parables. There are stories. And if you try to take a parable and interpret every point of that parable, you're going to have some awful doctrine. But parables aren't meant to be like that. Parables are, you're looking for what is the truth that Jesus is using this story to tell. And so you look at it and you say, it's a parable. People get messed up with proverbs like that. They go to the book of Proverbs and they'll come to a verse like, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. And that will give them all kinds of trouble because they say, I trained my children up and this one went astray. Or I know that pastor raised his family right and his boys astray. Well, so they'll come and they'll begin to try to get different meanings and say, oh, that means that when he's old, he'll come back. No, that isn't what the proverb says. The problem is you're trying to take a proverb and treat it like other literature. If the proverb is giving a general principle, a rule, a wise statement that it's a 99 out of 100 times. You train a child the way he should go, that's the way he'll go. But there are exceptions to that, and there has to be exceptions if you have free will, if you have minds where you can make your own choices. But the problem is people try to apply one type of literature and explanation to another. You say, that may be a little confusing. Well, that's why people spend their life studying the Bible. And it's important to not just go wild with the Bible, to take some time, find out what it's saying, apply the principles. So here is hyperbole. It's an exaggeration. If you told everything Jesus did in 33 years, the world itself couldn't contain the books. Now, you know, I'm not trying to take, I hope you don't leave here and say he's trying to take from the Bible, but it's impossible to live 33 years and do enough that the world itself couldn't contain the books. I mean, that isn't what is the point. The point is there are so many things that Jesus did that's not recorded. We don't have time and we don't have the space and we don't have the books to record them. What it is meant to tell us is there's a lot Jesus did that we don't know about. There's a lot of things that the Bible doesn't cover. Now, no doubt, he's referring to miracles. The book of John has at least 7 miracles beside the resurrection, beside the miracle we find in the 21st chapter of the fish being caught. That's just a limited portion. If you take all of the Bible, and you take all of the miracles, and you list them out, you say, that's everything Jesus ever did. No, it isn't. He did a lot more. So there's no doubt miracles. No doubt it's people. Like the book of John deals with people. For instance, in the John 3, you have Nicodemus. In John 4, you have the woman at the well. In John 9, you have the blind man that's healed. In John 11, you have Lazarus raised from the dead. On and on, you have cases like this. And yet, when all is said and done in the Gospels, it doesn't touch the surface of what Jesus did. Peter said it this way in Acts chapter 10, verse 38, that Jesus went about doing good. He spent his life going about doing good. The Bible doesn't contain every day of his life. In fact, it's interesting, the Bible contains a very limited amount of the life of Jesus. The Bible, 2 of the books tell us about his birth, the other 2 do not. One of the books tell us at 12 years old he was taken to the temple and left in Jerusalem, the rest of the books do not. All we have is his early first few years where he went into Egypt. His trip into Jerusalem, the next time we see him is 30 years old. At 30 years old, he goes and he comes and is baptized by John the Baptist, and he goes into the wilderness and begins his ministry. And then if you're reading very close in the Gospels, most of the 3 years are not even included. You come down to the last week of Jesus' life. The big emphasis of the Bible, that last week of his life. And then the 40 days after his resurrection. No, the Bible doesn't even begin to tell us everything that Jesus did. But what we do know is that he spent every day of his life going about doing good things. And we know that he did miraculous things. And what we know is that he spent his life with people. He spent his life looking for people. He spent his life touching people. That's what he did. Now, we're reminded then that the Bible is not a book that contains all that God knows. The Bible is a book that contains all that God wants us to know. That's what we have to remember. The Bible is sufficient for everything that we need in life. It is sufficient. And so he tells us there are many other things that Jesus did. And I've thought about that different times in my life, the testimony of that. My sister's here, as I mentioned, she'll no doubt remember. All of our life, we were raised in the church. And all of our life, one of the things that we heard was my father testify. And I heard him so many times I could almost do it in my sleep, remember it. Even before he was a preacher, churches would have him come and share his testimony. He taught in the church and Sunday school, and everybody knew about it. And he would go to different places, and then after he preached, he would do so. And many times I've heard him take this text. Now, this isn't the only text he used. He would take the text in the book of Genesis where Noah reached out and took the dove and brought it into the ark. And he would use that passage to tell what God had done for our family, that God had reached out and taken us into that ark. But this is a passage that I remember him talking about. And he would say, talk about many other things that God, many other things that Jesus did. That if the books were written, the world itself couldn't contain it. And he would begin to talk about what God had done for our family. And the testimony, because his life was one of those many other things. And he would tell about how his father was a drunk and how he himself had gone down that path. And at 19 years old, he was in a terrible accident. And two young teenagers were killed. And he was given 2 hours to live. And it crushed his voice and took the top of his head off. And if you could see it, his head always had that scar all the way around the top of his head. He was just hanging on when they found him. And he would talk about how he couldn't breathe and he was swelling up because he couldn't get the air out. And they had to put this hole in his throat and they put this metal trachea in him. And we were going through his things a couple weeks ago and they had that thing. They found it and Mulder's brother took it. And he'll be preaching with that thing from now on. I know that. And I had the choice to take it or not. I let Jerry take it. But my father would hold this medal up and he would talk about it and the different things that happened. But he talked about going into that ambulance and he was screaming through the night. And he was just, he didn't know how to pray, but he was wanting to pray and he was dying. He talked about getting to the hospital and the doctors told my grandmother, you've got 2 hours to live and get your priest and get your preacher. And my father would say, we didn't have a priest and we didn't have a preacher. We didn't know a preacher. We didn't have anybody. And he would say that his mother and his oldest sister, Wilma, went into a bathroom or a closet and got on her face and prayed before God and made a covenant with God. If he would spare their life, that they would be saved and they would follow the Lord. And God spared him. And my grandmother followed her course and became a Christian and reached the family for Christ. He talked about how my grandfather was such a drunk and a violent person and a wicked person and how as a teenager, as a boy, they were afraid of him. And the mother would hide him in the ditch when he'd come home, afraid of the dad. And when grandma got saved, it made my grandfather mad. My grandfather started going to church a little bit with him and just to argue with the preacher. And he would talk about how wrong the preacher was. And he'd go home and get his whiskey and go out back in a shed, and the shed that I knew as a boy because I was raised on the same place. And he would sit there and read the Bible to prove the preacher wrong, but he found out the preacher was right and he was wrong. And one day they told my dad, he said, your dad's going to be baptized. The preacher called him Big Link. And my father couldn't believe it and went to the church to watch him be baptized. And over a process of time, my father would tell about the day that he grabbed my mother by the hand and went forward to an old-fashioned altar and gave his heart to God. And the change that took place in his life and the change that took place in the family. You talk about, and I remember the day when my father walked to the front of the church and said God had called him to preach. I remember that as a boy. And I remember him talking about going back to work. And he only had one vocal cord. He could just speak over a whisper. Went back to work and told him God had called him to preach. And the boss had told him you'd be a really good preacher if you could talk. You'd make a good one. But he gave his life to doing that and serving the Lord with what he could. My father could only speak a whisper, but I guarantee you if he spoke down there at the corner of this road, I'd hear him. My ear was attuned to him. People would listen and many, many people came to Christ. Let me tell you something. This church is a fruit of his ministry today. He came down south and took a church down in the country. There were just a few people there. And he took that church, and for a few years it was like that, and all of a sudden God began to work, and God began to move. We had just a one-room building. There's Sunday school class in the front and one in the back. My grandmother taught the children in the back, and someone taught the adults in the front. And my father took that church, and before long the windows became doors into other Sunday school rooms, and we put bathrooms actually in that place. And that's where I found Jesus. That's where I was saved, in that old one-room church building. I'll never forget it. And God moved in that place. That's where I began to preach. That church burnt, and they built a new one. And God called me to preach, and I preached my first sermon down that church. It's still down on Bear Creek Road. Every now and then I drive by it. But my father would use this text and say many other things. Many other things. And he would talk about what God had continued to do and what God did in his life. Books couldn't be, there not enough books could be written to testify of what God has done. So I think about this verse because it's special to me because he would use it to bring that testimony. I don't know how many people came to Christ as they heard about what God had done to save my family. But I was thinking about this testimony across this country, across this congregation, because you're part of that many other things. You're part of what God has done. I just told you about being saved down at Old Bear Creek Church and starting to preach down at Bear Creek Church. And this church exists today because of that. And that exists because of what God did in Michigan at Old 10 Mile Free Will Baptist Church many, many years ago. But I look at this congregation. I've had the privilege of serving here for over 28 years. I've had the blessed privilege of marrying people and then marrying their children. That's been a part of it. We've had to, through the years, we've buried a lot of people, a lot of good people, went on to be with the Lord. I think about them often. I think about some of them and how we served together. We didn't agree about everything, but we served together. And I count it a privilege to do many of their funerals. Many of them came to know the Lord. Over the course of 28 years, a lot of folks have come to know the Lord. Upon this place, I watch it. I couldn't help, Tom, to think about your life. But Tom's back here. He was with us when we just started. I knew Tom when he was just a boy. And I watched him as a teenager. And now you look at his family and you see those four beautiful children. And he's raised them and they've raised good family. And I remember Tom and Kim getting married and watching those kids grow up now. And we'll watch their grandkids now for too many years, I suppose. I couldn't help but think about this passage. Many other things. Jesus has touched so many lives. And your life is here. Not I haven't touched it. Jesus has touched your life. He continues to work in the lives of people. Young people. Well, how can I just mention the work in China? That's something he just continues to do. People have come to know Jesus Christ over there that would not have known Jesus. But Jesus worked in the life of people and he moved in that way. Your life, what is your testimony? Do you know where your spiritual roots lie? People are so interested in getting on the internet and finding out where their family came from. And some of us be better off not to know. I mean, we'd just be embarrassed to know maybe where we did come from. I don't know why people want to. Somebody gave me a folder the other day when we was going through my dad's stuff. And this is the record of your family. And you'll want this. And it's still sitting where I put it when I got there. I'm not sure I want to know. Well, I know enough to know that but God's grace. He reached way down into a ditch when he saved my family. I know the rock from which we were hewn. I know the pit from which we were dug. But people are interested in that kind of lineage. But I want to ask you something. What's your testimony? Who reached your family for Christ? Have you ever followed back? My pastor, when I was a boy, I don't agree with everything he thought. But I'll tell you this. I'll never forget that he's the man that reached my family for Christ. That I look back and that's my heritage. And that's where God worked and many other things. And my family's a part of what God did. Your family. I can look out here, just this people. And I can just start pulling out of this crowd. Different ones. And you think, what has God wrought in my life? What has he done? Let me go a step further with you. This reminds me of my father's testimony. It reminds me of the people in this room and what God has done in your lives. And it's interesting, I could just go on, how God's brought families together and people together. It's the sovereign work of God to accomplish all this thing. But let me tell you this. The message goes on. The many other things. It's just what he began to do. That's what Luke says. These are things he began to do. But he continues to do it. And if you're in this room, there's a message in this verse for you. You're someone in this room and God isn't real in your life. Your life hasn't been changed by the grace of God. You're out here and you say, I haven't experienced that. But let me tell you, Jesus still works. Jesus is able to do for you today what he's done for anybody in the past. Jesus opened blinded eyes. Jesus healed people who couldn't walk. Jesus raised the dead. There was nothing that he couldn't do. And I'm going to tell you, there's nothing in your life that's too big for God to deal with. There's nothing too hard for God. God can change your life. Jesus Christ, who did all the things that John records in this Bible, is still working in people's lives today. People are still being transformed by the power of God. And the power of Christ is present. If you respond to the grace of God, God calls you to himself. God calls you from your sin. God makes you very aware of your need. And God is drawing you in to himself, but you're clinging on and you're holding to where you are. And there's something you won't let go. You're just like the boy with his hand in the cookie jar. You won't let go. But I can tell you, my friend, your case is not too hard for God. Every now and then I meet a sinner and he'll say, I come to church, but the roof will fall in. I say, no, you come. I'll save you a seat on the front row. Save you a front row seat. All the Baptists take the back seat. We have to save the front seat for visitors. But we get awful high opinion of what we're going to do or cause. But I tell you this, no case is too hard for Jesus. God has taken your life. I just look at this crowd. And I'm thinking about the testimonies. Brother Sam, I just can't help think about your testimony. Here, 10 years ago, how God moved in his life and saved him. And boy, he'll tell you about it. He'll testify to you. And if you haven't had the opportunity for him to share his testimony, you'll talk, Brother Sam. Can you imagine you live 64 years of your life? And then God moves in your life and providential things and brings him to Jesus. That's how it works. And you're here today. Your life can be made new. You can be born again. That's what this book teaches us. You can have new life in Christ. You can have abundant life. This book tells us of a woman married 5 times, living in adultery, and Jesus saves her. Gospel of John, the miracles, unlimited. What God can do and what he will do. And so I'm telling you, many other things. Why don't you be a part of that? Why don't you be a part of what he's going to do today? Why don't you give your life to Christ? Let him change your life. His power can make you what you ought to be. He can help you. He can lift you. He is a Savior. He is a Deliverer. Let me go full circle with you. Spent the first 10 minutes, 5 minutes talking about hyperboles and translating interpreting the Bible and all of that. But it really come down to this. And I was thinking after I thought through all this, the final analysis, is it possible to over-exaggerate what Jesus has done? Hyperbole is exaggeration for the purpose of emphasis. John is saying, all the world can't contain his books, and he's trying to emphasize. He did so much. And so you wonder, is it possible for me as a preacher to over-exaggerate what Jesus has done? You think about a carpenter, a man that was born 2,000 years ago, raised as a carpenter and a carpenter's family, in a period where there's no transportation like automobiles, trains, no communication like televisions and radios and phones and all that sort of stuff. A man who never went over 200 miles from the place he was born. He never traveled over 200 miles. Spent his life in just a small part of the globe. And yet from there, His name has spread and His teachings. Do you know this? More books have been written about Jesus Christ than any other man that's ever lived. Do you know that? Colleges have been formed, born, created to just teach people the meaning of what He said. All over the globe, His message has spread. From every tribe and every nation, people are brought to new life in Christ. To be honest, it's just very hard to exaggerate. I know this is hyperbole, but it's very hard to exaggerate what Jesus has done. 2,000 years later, and His story is still being told. Another page in that story is right now for you. Another page, you're part of that story. Your family's a part of that book. And if Jesus tarries, your family's going to take up more and more pages of that book. Because He's going to save your children. He's going to save your grandchildren. He'll save your great-grandchildren. It'll be generational if you allow it to be. Don't you know that? It can go on and on if we'll let it. I want the pages of my family book and His story to go on and on and on. I trust if the Lord tarries 100 years, that my descendants will be part of that story. The people in this room, that your family will be part of that story. It's sad because if you read that story, you'd be reading about families and you say, what happened to that family? And they slowly drift away from God. I don't want that. I want my family to be a part of this many other things till Jesus comes and then forever with Him. This has been a tremendous book. We close with this verse. But the story doesn't close. If it's not your story, it can be your story. If your life hasn't been touched, it still can be. And if it has, tell others about what Jesus did for you. Use your opportunities to tell, how did I come to Christ? How did my family come to Christ? Let me ask you, your children, do they know? Have you told them about you, how your family came to Christ? Just tell them. You know, that's pretty an inoffensive way to witness, isn't it? Does somebody give you an opportunity and you tell them? You may not know a lot of theology, but you can tell somebody what Jesus means to you, can't you? Can't you do that? You can tell them what He's done for you. There's a song that says, I know what Jesus did for me. I was listening to it last night. I know what Jesus... I wasn't there. The songwriter talks about when He walked on the Sea of Galilee. And he goes on and on to talk about the different things He didn't see and didn't know. But he said, but I know what Jesus did for me. I know what He's done for my life. I don't talk about it much because, to be honest with you, I was just ashamed. But I'll never forget that night at Bear Creek Free Will Baptist Church. On a Sunday night when the man spoke on the prodigal son. It wasn't halfway through that sermon I knew that the prodigal was me. And I was going to come home that night. And I did. And I've watched it through the years. One thing after another thing after another. And I can tell you, Jesus will never leave you where He finds you. And if you know Jesus, then just keep on seeing what He does in your life. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Stand together. Father, thank You for the blessing of this book.